as you move along a busy life, if you're a business person, moving at an hectic pace, pausing to learn the true value of nothing, but moving on and on and on. Will you take time enough today to pause and ask yourself how much God loves you, that He cares for you? Or for those of you who live with insecurities and say, I don't have much to offer, isn't it wonderful to know that He has given Himself for you? If God could say through Isaiah, what more have I done for you that I've not already done? How much more could He say it after the cross when He sent His Son to lay down His life for you and for me? God's love, undeserving, grows on relationship, desperately needed.
Welcome to Let My People Think, the weekly program featuring Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias. We're glad you're with us today because Ravi's message is one of great hope for all of us. Looking at how God communicated through the life of the prophet Hosea, we'll see that God desires to bless us with His presence and love, and that He wants us to come to Him, even if we may have strayed far away from Him. So if you're struggling to know God's love or even doubting that He could love you, we hope that today's message will speak to your heart. Now, here's Ravi with his message, The Prophet Marries a Prostitute.
There is an unmerited and an undeserving status of God's love. I remember my wife and I walking into Mother Teresa's home. I mentioned this, I think, Nirmal Hriday, which literally means pure heart, and saw people who'd been rescued from destitute conditions, men and women who looked so pitiful that even hospitals had turned them away. In fact, when you entered her home, there was a sign outside that told ambulance drivers not to bring anybody in there unless even the hospitals had turned them away as having gone too far. And the fascinating thing is that you see them brought into this home, and young women who are there committing their lives as servants in that Sisters of Charity will be holding these people in their arms, cuddling them, giving them food, giving them sustenance, giving them strength. And that kind of embrace the person receives by just looking into the eyes of the one that is giving the love, and they remain utterly silent. It is a heart that responds, knowing it doesn't deserve it, but somebody has chosen to love. But not only is the love of God unmerited, it is undeserving for us, it is also a love that grows and is sustained by relationship. The longer you walk with God, the more you understand how glorious this love is. Let me illustrate it this way. Our first child, Sarah, was born in 1975. I, for the first time, stood there and watched a miracle taking place. You know, when they give you this Lamaze training method, they actually get you men to believe something unbelievable, that you are going to be the coach during the delivery of this baby. Imagine we men are going to be the coach. We are going to tell our wives how to endure the pain. We're going to tell them it's okay. It's only 2 minutes away or 3 minutes away. We don't understand it because most of the time the men standing there are wondering when they're going to have their next meal. Should they really be standing there coaching their wives? So I stood there and watched this marvelous thing take place, the birth of our little baby. And as the baby was washed and made clean and so on, the doctor put that child into my arms too. And as I cuddled that little one, there was an overflow of heart, of a heart of love that is indescribable. You just embrace that little one. This is the first time you've seen that little one. And the hours went by, and I left the hospital room, got back to my home, and late that night, I was informed that our daughter had a problem, that her blood had a problem in it. And in layman's language, they said she was allergic to her own blood. The life within her was being destroyed faster than it was being built up. 2 days went by, 3 days went by. I think somewhere on the third or fourth day, the doctor had phoned me at night and said that she was in critical condition and they were going to have to make a decision that night if they were going to need to do a complete blood transfusion. And that night, I couldn't sleep. I paced the floor alone. We were living in Toronto, Canada at that time. I walked the floor half of the night so heavy-hearted. And I asked myself the question, is Sarah's life going to be spared? Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you had taken 100 babies and placed them beside Sarah, I want to say to you that chances are it would not have been that easy for me to recognize our own. I'd only had a few minutes with her. But if you'd looked at me and said, do you love your daughter? I'd have said, absolutely. I'd lay down my life for her. You see, there is something about a bond of a relationship. And over the years, it gets only deeper and deeper and deeper. It had only been minutes that you'd laid your eyes upon your own child. But it was a bond that was there, I believe, planted by God Himself. He has made you. He has fashioned you as a unique individual. And He loves you with an everlasting love. You, sir, you, madam, are important to Him. You are the apple of His eye. If you come close and come close and even closer and look for a reflection, you will see your reflection in it. Because it's a love that you don't deserve, but it's a love that grows on the basis of who He knows you to be. And when you find Him to be that person, that love gets only deeper in your own heart. Not only is it a love that grows, not only is it a love that is unmerited, ladies and gentlemen, it is a love that is desperately needed. It is a love that we all need and we must understand. You see, in the economy of God, we are meant to love people and use things. In the human economy, we have ended up loving things and using people. I met a young man once in a country I shall leave unnamed. And it was a cross-cultural marriage of rather dramatic proportions in a land where there were a lot of tensions in that situation. And I remember this young man coming and speaking to me after meetings. This was nearly 2 decades ago, I believe. I was early in ministry. And he told me how he had loved this girl, how he had cherished this girl, how he had wanted to marry this one so dearly, and he married her. But somehow, through the poisoning influence of friends and others who did not want to see this marriage continue, the seeds of doubt and the seeds of prejudice were sown more and more and more. Till this young woman finally one day decided she could not remain in this relationship because of the pressure, and she chose to walk away from this young man. And he said to me something very staggering, and my heart was filled, my eyes welled up in tears, I could not stop. He said to me, he said, you know, Ravi, he said, when I wake up every morning and I look into the mirror, it is one of the most difficult things to accept in life that this is the way I really do look. He said, I used to come to this church late because I didn't want anybody to see me, and I used to leave early. But this young woman took an interest in my spiritual condition, and one day she waited at the back. As soon as I tried to slip out, she stopped me and talked to me. And our friendship grew. She gave me a new purpose to live. Suddenly, I gained a new value in my life. Till that friendship blossomed and it ended up in marriage. It became the celebrated cause of my life, and now I have lost it. I know I have nothing physically to offer in my appearance, but I've got a heart as full of love as it ever can be, and it has been trampled upon. Ever felt like that? Ever felt that in your heart and in mine that we can carry on and we don't need anybody's love, or we look inside and we say, I don't deserve anybody's love. I'm not much to offer to any human being. Ladies and gentlemen, I say to you, as you move along a busy life, if you're a business person, moving at a hectic pace, pausing to learn the true value of nothing, but moving on and on and on, will you take time enough today to pause and ask yourself how much God loves you? That He cares for you. Or for those of you who live with insecurities and say, I don't have much to offer, isn't it wonderful to know that He has given Himself for you? That's why He said through the prophet Isaiah, what more could I have done for you that I have not already done? Wherefore, when I'm looking for grapes, why are you bringing forth wild grapes? If God could say through Isaiah, what more have I done for you that I've not already done? How much more could He say it after the cross when He sent His Son to lay down His life for you and for me? God's love, undeserving, grows on relationship, desperately needed. But as you move on through this book, you begin to see how the problem intensifies. Gomer needed Hosea's love. It was a love that could have grown on the basis of relationship. It was a love that she did not deserve. But God commanded him to go and love her, to go and buy her back for half the price of a slave and a day's rations, bring her back to the home. He commanded Hosea to love her. Hosea went, met with her, talked with her, and somehow would reason with her that the children were waiting, he was waiting, and finally she would say, "All right, I'm going to turn away from this despicable life and return home." Gomer would return home. They would celebrate. The children would welcome. There was reason for rejoicing again. But all of a sudden the day would come where she would want to go back to her harlotry and the life that she had gotten so accustomed to on the wrong side of the tracks, and she would leave. And so we see in chapter 6 this kind of dialogue. Hosea saying to the people, "Come, let us return and he will heal. Let us go back to the God who loves us and he will bind us." Hosea is giving an invitation to the people to come back to God. God interrupts the sermon and says this, "Ah, but your goodness is like the morning cloud, like the early dew, it goes away." Basically, God is saying, "Wait a minute, don't listen to what Hosea is saying to come until you listen to what I have to say to you. By all means, come. But I want you to remember what was the promise you made the last time you came and you did not follow through the last time you came into an invitation and responded." You see, your goodness is like a morning cloud, like the early dew, it goes away. What God is really saying is this, hear me please, love is not just an emotional thing. Love will never be pure until love comes with the will to be committed as well, not just the emotion of feeling. I believe without the emotion, love is a drudgery. But may I say to you, without the will, it is a mockery. If your will is not committed to the one you have pledged to love for the rest of your life, you are making a mockery of that person. And what God is saying to you, come, by all means come, but when you come, and make that commitment, make sure your will comes with you. Otherwise, your goodness will be like the morning cloud and like the early dew. It will go away. My brother and his wife have just celebrated 32 years of married life. And it's fine. It's fine. In fact, they live in Atlanta now, and as soon as I go back, my wife thinks he sees the plane in his mind, because as soon as I get home and that phone rings, it's generally him. "How are you doing, Rob? Welcome back. Can we get together for some curry and rice or something like that?" God calls you and me to a wonderful love. He calls me to bring my will to him and pour that will into his hands. First we saw God's love, but second we saw God's heartache when he said their goodness was like the morning cloud. Thirdly and quickly, and I'll keep this brief, but we saw God's response. He said, "I will beat you as a moth, I will beat you as a lion, and I will remove my presence and depart from you." A moth weakens, a lion tears its objects apart. He says, "Look, I have tried to weaken you as a people, you have not responded. I have tried to bring judgment upon you as a people, you have not responded." He said, "You've left me with only one option. I will remove my presence and depart from you." In effect, he's saying, "Gomer, you keep doing this again and again and again with Hosea. The day will come where Hosea and the children will find out that they are leaving and no longer have that door open for an unrequited love that makes all these promises and never honors them. Because a constantly broken promise is a life that has broken itself and has got nothing left to offer because its word means nothing anymore." And God says here, he says, "I'll beat you as a moth, I'll beat you as a lion, I'll remove my presence and depart from you." I believe what has happened in our world today, leader after leader after leader is trying to lead the free world, and yet so little of God is at the center of the leadership that you begin to wonder how much longer we can go on. And what I say to you, I say with fond affection, because the United States is now my home. I have lived there now for nearly 20 years, and Atlanta is the city we love, and my children are all raised there. That is the way God moved in our lives, and yet the world is my parish. And yet I see what has happened in the West in the last 30 years that I have lived in the West. I went as a young man because my father emigrated there. I had dreams of business. I wanted to work in business, and I worked in business. And I was a new believer when I left India. And yet I found, as I moved in the business world and saw such emptiness, such hollowness, and saw the bankruptcy of the heart and the home and the affections of the heart, I moved into a call that God took me into ministry. And what I say to you now, I have said on many a radio program, and I've said on many a television program, all the blessings that God poured upon those two nations of Canada and the United States and in the United Kingdom across the decades and the centuries, we see those blessings being squandered. We see a turning away in many high powers of leadership and politics and academia, and men and women turning their backs upon God. And yet they are wondering, what is wrong with the nation? Why are we suffering now the way we do? And I remember the words of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, that great luminous intelligence of this last century. Solzhenitsyn, who paid so dearly for the years under the torture of the Gulag. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, speaking at Harvard University, got a round of booing at some time because of how pointed he was in his message. But basically his message was called A World Split Apart. And in that he made this comment. He said, when I was a little boy, I remember my parents and grandparents sitting around a table late into the night. And many times there would be sorrowful discussions, wondering why the tragedy of a great empire, why the killing, why the imprisonment, why the millions who've lost their lives to some ideologue. And they would all be talking in low, somber terms. And suddenly in the lateness of the night, my grandfather would say this very quietly. He would say, let me say this to you all. The reason we are paying the price we are in the Soviet Union is because we have forgotten God. That's why. Solzhenitsyn paused and then he said this. He said, ladies and gentlemen, I am now an old man. He said, I have read thousands of books. I have written thousands and thousands of pages. And if you were to now ask me why we are suffering as a world, I would answer it in the line my grandfather used to answer it. It is because we have forgotten God. The shootings that go on in the high schools. I was in Littleton, Colorado to speak on the subject some months after it happened. One young woman came forward and said she was there at Columbine the day the shooting took place. And she was struggling to get the message out of her mouth. She said, it has changed me. How can I get God into my life and get my life right back again? Ladies and gentlemen, when you see so much happening all around us and so much that is lost, remember the words of Solzhenitsyn. It was Anatoly Sharansky who recently visited the prison where he was imprisoned. And he sat there for hours with his family and told the guards to shut the doors for hours because he wanted his family to know the years he was in solitary confinement there. Now he's trade minister. And Sharansky left the prison and he said this to an audience when he left. He said, I want to remind you of what Andrei Sakharov, the great physicist, said, who helped devise the atomic bomb. He said, Sakharov said when he was a younger man, he thought the most powerful weapon in the world was a bomb. Sakharov has now said the most powerful weapon in the world is the truth. Do you know the truth of your heart and the truth of God's love that He woos you and brings you back? May I close with this final point. God's love, God's heartache, God's response, and finally, God's hope. He looked at that nation and he said, I will heal your backsliding. I will love you freely, for my anger is turned away from you. That God is willing to reach out his arms and give you fresh hope and give you fresh meaning. I have a friend in the United States. My wife and I have those friends. They live in Connecticut. And a few years ago, we were at a conference where I was speaking, where they were attending, and they put their little boy into my arms. His picture is now on our refrigerator in Atlanta in our kitchen. His name is George. And this young couple left Connecticut and went to Romania to adopt a little boy. And they walked into the room and they saw this young lad there without any arms. There were many others with lesser deformities, but this little boy had no arms at all. The nurses and others would turn their face away from him because they thought he was a bad omen, that there was a curse upon his life and his family. That's why he was born like that. And this young, lovely American couple walked through and went over and asked if this is the little boy that they could adopt. When the mother heard of it, she said, "Why do they want to adopt my son who has no arms?" And she said, "Are you taking him back because you're going to do some genetic experimentation with him?" They said, "No. Why are you taking him back? Why do you want my son?" And this young mother knew she would not be able to talk Romanian, so she had taken a Romanian Bible and opened it to the 139th Psalm. And the actual mother started to read in the 139th Psalm that you are fearfully and wonderfully made, and that before you were even conceived in the womb, I knew you, I formed you and knew and loved you and all of this. And as that psalm was read, the mother had tears running down her face and started to wipe the tears away, took the little boy and said, "If that is what you think of my son, I know he will not only be safe in your arms, but he will be safe in the arms of God as well." And the actual biological mother clutched the Bible to her heart as she gave her son away. We saw this little boy, George. He's the cutest little boy you'd ever want to see. Because he has no arms, he cannot balance himself very well. So when you take him in your arms, he puts his face against your face so he can have his balance. And I have that picture with his little boy's cheek against my face here, so tender, so soft, so loving, and grinning from ear to ear. When he goes into a restaurant now, having no arms, he picks up his knife and fork with his toes. He eats with his knees bent and the toes and puts that food into his mouth. He is more dexterous with his feet than many of us will be with our hands. This young boy has found out what love is and what it is to be given a chance to live again when such a handicap plagues you. Your heart and my heart is handicapped. It lives in sin. And God is saying to you and me today, come here, come here, come closer. I'm willing to cleanse you and forgive you. Can I close with this illustration? It's a true story. It was told in People magazine, April 1990. The last empress of the Habsburg royalty, which went all the way back to the Holy Roman Empire, her name was Zita. Zita had died, and her body was going to be taken on a horse-drawn carriage with all of the royal attendants and so on. My wife and I visited those churches after I read this story, and she was placed on this carriage with six black horses and all the fine uniforms and 8,000 men and women in black following this horse-drawn carriage clip, clop, clip, clop over the cobblestones of that lovely city. And then they arrived at the church where she was going to be entombed. And People magazine said an old custom was followed. The leader of this funeral procession comes and knocks on the door of St. Capuchin, the church. And as he knocks on the Capuchin church, as he knocks on the door, there is silence. You can't hear a sound. The 8,000 people in pin drop silence. And a voice comes from behind the closed door. "Who goes there?" And the man speaks out loudly amid the echo of the surrounding quietness there. "Zita, Queen of Bohemia, Dalmatia, Croatia, Slavonia, Galicia, Queen of Jerusalem, Grand Duchess of Tuscany and Krakow." A voice comes from inside. "I do not know her." Silence. Second knock. "Who goes there?" "Zita, Empress of Austria, Queen of Hungary." Voice comes back from the inside. "I do not know her." There's a third knock. "Who goes there?" "Zita, a sinning mortal." Heard of a bolt is opened and the doors are swung open and she was brought in. When you and I stand before God, it won't be with our degrees. It won't be with our titles. It won't be with our bank accounts. It'll only be when we say, I was a sinning mortal. Have mercy upon me, a sinner. God's love, God's heartache, God's response, and God's hope. Will you come to Him today and watch what it is to rebuild a life just as God had wanted Hosea to rebuild his home?
God's love for us is incredible, that He continues to love us even when we fall. In one of his psalms, David said to God, "You are my Lord. I have no good besides you." Ravi reminded us that none of our earthly achievements, titles, or good works will change our hearts. Only God can do that. And the good news for all of us is that God is willing to do that, and He continues to reach out to us today, even if we may have fallen. Let us not trust in ourselves. Let us trust the unchangeable heart of God. Today's broadcast is available on CD and cassette. When ordering, ask for CD or cassette number 101, entitled The Prophet Marries a Prostitute. Again, that's CD or cassette 101, The Prophet Marries a Prostitute. Cassettes are $5, CDs are $9, and that price includes shipping and handling. If you'd like to place a credit card order, call us at 1-800-448-6766. That's 1-800-448-6766. The order line is available 24 hours a day. When you contact us, ask for a free catalog that features materials by Ravi and his team members. If you'd like to place your order through the Internet, go to rzim.org. Our online resource center is a user-friendly way to preview and order resources. Once again, that's rzim.org. We also want to announce that Ravi's new book, The Lotus and the Cross, is now available in bookstores and on our website, rzim.org. The Lotus and the Cross depicts an imaginary conversation between Jesus and Buddha, centered around the life of Priya, a young woman struggling with a deadly disease. Come along on an imaginary boat ride as these two eminent figures discuss life, suffering, and redemption. Again, that's Ravi's newest book, The Lotus and the Cross, available now in stores and on our website, rzim.org. If you'd like to write, address your envelope to RZIM, Post Office Box 921-939, Norcross, Georgia, 30010. That's RZIM, Post Office Box 921-939, Norcross, Georgia, 30010. In Canada, contact our office there at 2476 Argentia Road, Suite 203, Mississauga, Ontario, L5N6M1. Again, our Canadian address is 2476 Argentia Road, Suite 203, Mississauga, Ontario, L5N6M1. Please be sure to give us the call letters of the station when you contact us. Knowing which station you're listening to can help us better evaluate the effectiveness of the broadcast. This weekly program, Let My People Think, is a listener-supported radio ministry and a production of Ravi Zacharias International Ministries, Atlanta, Georgia.